behind the wheel, under the hood, and beyond with Car Stuff from HowStuffWorks.com.
And you know what that music means, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to another episode of Car Stuff. I'm Ben.
And I'm Scott.
And that's our super producer, Noel, as always, behind the boards for us there. Today, before we get started with our podcast, we'd like to issue a few minor, let's call them administrative matters.
Yeah, we'll call them clarification, I guess, on a couple of items from our Stout Scarab podcast. How about that? There were a couple of things that I was listening to as I was kind of, you know, QAing this episode, I guess, when we were, you know, going through it for quality assurance, as we do. And and I realized that there were a couple of things that I let slip that I probably shouldn't have. And I want to correct that right now. If that's okay.
Absolutely, please.
All right. So just minor points, but I want to make them because I know someone will catch me on it. That's why I want to do it. All right. So we mentioned towards the end of the podcast that this was the first all fiberglass body. Mm-hmm. Now that may be true, but I think that it was a little misleading in the way that I said it. And I meant to say, and I think we also mentioned the
Corvette, right?
Yeah. The 1953 Corvette, because that was the first year of the Corvette. And again, fiberglass body, but there's a lot of qualifiers that have to be put into place here. Now, the Corvette, I know that was probably the one that most people think of initially, right? You think mm-hmm. that that's probably the first one. However, there's a guy in 1949 who created a vehicle called the Glassbar G2. And that was actually the first all fiberglass production sports car body. Now, granted, this wasn't major, you know, big production like the Chevy Corvette was, because most people consider that the most prevalent example, I guess, from that era.
Right. Yeah. I have to ask then, and I'm sure I'm not alone in this, listeners, what then is the threshold for production car?
Well, I don't know. See, that's the thing, because they called the Scarab a production car at one point. And
right.
We only said that the Y experimental vehicle that they created after the war, that one was the full fiberglass body mm-hmm. kit one, the concept vehicle. And we said something about being the first fiberglass production body or first fiberglass body. Mm-hmm. That may be true. I'm not entirely sure. I think that, you know, they were playing around with fiberglass at the time. This whole world of like what's production, what's not production, how many cars were produced, because only a few complete Glassbar G2 cars were produced in 1949.
Right. And only 9 Scarabs.
Yeah, that's right. And some of these G2s were produced as just body kits or chassis kits. So, again, is that really, you know, production? I don't know. I mean, I consider the Corvette to be the first major mass-produced, mm-hmm. you know, fiberglass body car ever. But again, I do think that the Scarab concept vehicle, I think it was 1946, mm-hmm. I think that is the first full-body concept vehicle that was all fiberglass. Or, you know, again, I'm adding more qualifiers to it.
Yeah, I was going to say, are you talking about the Y? And you're saying 46?
The Y, yeah. You see where this gets very confusing, right?
Yeah.
Okay, let's move on from that.
Okay, what's number two?
Number two correction here is we mentioned the top speed of the Scarab, and I mm-hmm. believe I said that, you know, when you're on the highway cruising along at 80 miles an hour, and then I thought it was tested up to 90. Well, it turns out the Scarab had only been tested up to 75. It had a top speed of 75. It was the Dymaxion, which we also mentioned in that episode.
Ah, yes.
That had been tested up to 90, but the creator of that vehicle said that it could possibly go above 100 miles per hour.
That's Buckminster Fuller.
That's right.
Yeah.
Good point, Ben. And, so I don't know if it ever went above 90 or not, but, again, the Stout Scarab, 75 miles per hour, that's known to be the top end of the mm-hmm. Scarab.
Now, interesting story. This is more of a rambling side note rather than a clarification.
That's right. That was a rambling clarification.
Buckminster Fuller, very, very interesting person. He named that huge three-wheeled vehicle the Dymaxion, but he named a lot of inventions the Dymaxion because they were supposed to symbolize his cohesive vision of a better world.
Really? So this, you have to say the Dymaxion car.
Pretty much, yeah.
Otherwise, people don't know what Dymaxion invention you're talking about.
Yeah, and listeners, please look up the Dymaxion vehicle, because I'm still iffy about it being a three-wheeled vehicle.
And I'm still iffy about this whole fiberglass thing. So, you know, I've tried to look into it in just sketchy records. So we'll leave it at that and move on. How about
okay, that? And we're moving on to something very much related to this. In our Scarab episode, one thing that we talked a lot about were the innovations.
Yeah, lots of new technology and some – Some of these things that we're going to talk about today are not necessarily brand new to us or new to Car Stuff listeners because we've told you about them in the past.
Yep.
But there's some new information that goes along with them. So not everything is as it was, you know, even months or even years ago when we talked about it. These are things that are now, you know, taking a turn, and they possibly are going to show up in production cars very soon.
From science fiction to luxury vehicles to science fact for everyone. Scott, you came up with this idea, and it was inspired, I believe, by the Connected Cars 2014 conference in Amsterdam that was in June of this year, right?
Yeah, that's right. And it was written about in an article, in MSN Cars from the United Kingdom.
Mm-hmm.
And they kind of boiled down all this information into about 16 new technologies that we're likely to see within the next 10 years. And I know that sounds like a long time out, but think about cars 10 years ago.
Yeah.
You know what? I've got a perfect example.
Okay.
My car is a 2005. We've talked about that many times, right?
Oh my gosh, it's almost 10 years ago.
It's almost 10 years old. So look at my car, you know, if I'm in my vehicle and I'm kind of looking around at what it has, what it doesn't have.
Yeah.
And I jump into a car that's a 2014 model. It's a night and day difference. I mean,
yeah,
it's incredible the way they've advanced, and it's only going to be a steeper climb from this point forward. I mean, it's going to, you're going to see a lot more advancements quicker than you did in the last 10 years.
Absolutely.
And that's always the way it is. It always seems to ramp up a little faster.
Mm-hmm.
So there's 16 of these. There's one that's kind of, there's total 17, but the last one I would say is more of a cautionary item.
I believe so, and rightly so. Well, let's just kick it off, and I've got an idea here, Scott, and tell me what you think. We walk down this list and we explore some of the different points and technologies, and then maybe we can talk about some of the themes, because there's definitely a theme, here. How's that feel?
I like it.
All right. So, number one, smartphones. By 2025, it's estimated that 90% of all new cars will have integrated telematics systems.
Okay, so integrated telematics systems in cars sounds very futuristic, right?
It does.
But again, look at a car from 10 years ago and look at some of the features that it had or didn't have at that point, and look at a car now, and you're going to find that this is what they call the Internet of Things. This IoT is kind of a buzz phrase that people are using right now. Is that right?
Yes, sir.
So it's the idea that all devices are linked together or connected somehow. And, of course, your car is going to be part of that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the car is going to be just another thing that's on the Internet. And as crazy as it sounds, as dangerous as it might sound to be driving while you're in an Internet-connected car, just hold off a little bit on that concern, which is valid because there are other technologies that may render that entire conversation moot.
Ah, very good.
There we go.
Yeah. Now, listen, usually I don't buy into comments like this when they say that, you know, everything's going to be connected and it's all going to work this way and here's exactly how it's going to happen. But it really does seem like automotive technology has moved so fast recently. And I keep coming back to this 10 years ago thing, but
sure,
it's truly the case. I mean, right now, just as an example, in this article, it says that cars are already highly complex. There are 200 million lines of code controlling some premium cars right now. Unbelievable. That's remarkable. I mean, so expect to see new cars that are delivered with SIM cards.
Yep.
That's kind of hard to believe, right? Like just as your phone would be.
Mm-hmm.
SIM cards already embedded, ready to connect to any mobile network that you happen to be around, near, connected to, you know, whatever.
And this is kind of, this is something that is already sort of occurring, but the difference with that SIM card is that, you know, it could be to a point where you switch out when you buy a new car. You just switch out the card so it knows everything that your old car knew.
Yeah, this is strange, isn't it? It's a strange idea that you can take the information from your previous car with you into your new car.
Right, because that's what we have always said for so long. It's been true that, you know, each car that you own and you get to know, you have, it has kind of its own personality, at the risk of sounding a little bit metaphysical about it. And a lot of people hold on to their cars just for those sentimental reasons. But what if you could take all of that stuff with you in a little chip?
It's like your own digital fingerprint or something that you're taking with you and applying to that new vehicle. It's really weird. It's a strange thought.
Yeah. And another thing, a lot of these technologies are already in there. As you said at the top, Scott, they're already in sort of these nascent stages. For instance, the idea that our connected cars will have apps, yeah, like a smartphone will, that already kind of happens.
Well, it kind of does, and it's mostly due to people bringing the apps in via, you know, smartphones, right?
Yeah.
Connecting
yeah
them somehow to the nav system, uploading them, that type of thing, right? But we're talking about things like voice-activated integration, you know, things that are a little more intuitive than what they are right now,
mm-hmm,
ways that cars can coordinate vehicle to vehicle, which isn't really happening right now, but they're kind of, there's a push for that.
Yeah.
Apps that will somehow, you know, talk to other vehicles around mm-hmm them that are also connected via that same app.
Or carpooling and ride sharing, which is going to be an increasingly important thing in very dense urban areas where people cannot afford to park. Like you and I, Scott, we can't afford to work and park in Manhattan.
No, definitely not. No, in fact, I can barely afford to park in Atlanta. How about any sporting event? I can't afford to park at any sporting event.
Oh, man. Yeah, I just have to convince myself that it won't be a good game.
That's true. Yeah, it's somehow worth it. All right. So, you know, we're talking about, though, these apps. And, you know, we typically bring the smartphones in and we download them, we upload them, whatever. But the thing is, you're going to be able to do this straight from your dashboard, and that's the difference.
That's the difference.
Yeah, you're able to just do it with the vehicle itself, no other peripheral device.
This brings us to an interesting point. Anyone with an IT or computer engineering background is already thinking about the massive amounts of data that these things would generate. If you had every car essentially becoming its own input-output source on the web, then it is making so much information, where it's going, what music we like to play, at what time, what was the top speed, at what time, slowest speed. All of that ends up being stored somewhere, right?
Yeah, that's right.
And it ends up being stored not in the car necessarily, but in the cloud.
Yeah, and now this is the idea, right? Because there's just simply going to be too much data to store within the vehicle itself. It's going to have to go somewhere else. There's not going to be the capability to store that much data. And I mean, I have to kind of take a step back and say, like, why does this have to be so difficult sometimes? I mean, I understand that, you know, it's important to monitor the car systems like we do now, right? But, I mean, as far as storing all that information and keeping all that information, just continually building and making volume after volume. I know it's not measured that way, but volumes of information.
Yeah, that's how it feels, though.
It really does. So, I mean, maybe the strangest thing about this whole thing to me is that, you know, cars run on so much data. I understand that they just continually require that much data to operate. But why store it? I mean, that's my thought, is why store all this information?
Can I respond to that?
Sure.
It might seem a bit cynical, but it's only because I'm right. I am convinced of this, Scott. The possible revenue from this is just too good for companies to walk away from. We're not just talking advertising. Imagine if, let's say, Noel, you buy a car in a few years and you are driving and it figures out, hey, Noel is always in traffic headed this direction around this time of day, about 5 days a week when he's on the way home. Mm-hmm. And he usually stops at this one location that has like a Quick Trip, you know, or a fast food place or something. And then says, we'll sell this space on his radio, no matter what's going on, what he's listening to or watching or whatever. We're going to have an ad for Quick Trip or something pop up.
Targeted advertising.
Then insurance, which would be huge for insurance. And some insurance companies already have programs where you can sign up to have them, track your car's metrics.
Hmm.
And then, of course, the scary big government stuff.
Interesting idea, Ben. Now, I hadn't thought of it that way, that, you know, this could be custom or tailored to individual drivers. I hadn't thought of it in that small of a scale.
I think that's the result.
Or is that a giant scale?
That's a giant scale.
I guess it would be the giant scale way to think of it. So that's interesting. That's a good thought. But I don't know. It just seems that, you know, storing all this information remotely, not in your car, is that a great idea or is it dangerous idea?
I think it's dangerous. I see why people are going to do it. And in some circles, this is pitched as a profound convenience.
Hmm.
You know, imagine you go rent a car and you just hop in the car and all of a sudden it anticipates what you want. It finds the radio station you like. It puts your seat the right way.
And that's our very next item here, Ben. That's portable data.
Mm-hmm.
So the benefit is that you get to take all of your information with you in any connected car that you purchase, rent, borrow, whatever. Mm-hmm. I mean, the idea is that it automatically adjusts your seat. It tunes into your favorite radio station. It knows your playlists, you know, all kinds of things. I mean, it might even know where you want to go. I mean, based on your previous information. So it may already, you know, preload some navigation destinations that you may find interesting. Strange things like that, kind of creepy things like that, mm-hmm. I guess. You know, that'd be weird if you got into a rental car and it was very, very similar to the car that you left behind at home.
It reminds me of HAL from 2001 Space Odyssey.
A little bit like that.
A little bit too smart.
Yeah, it knows just a little bit too much about you, right? I mean, so you get into a rental car and then it automatically adjusts to the seat position that you like. The mirrors mm-hmm. may adjust themselves to mm-hmm. the way you like. Favorite radio stations, if it's a satellite radio station, those tune in. You know, playlists that you've saved from MP3s or whatever.
Right.
Those are automatically there with you. What a weird thought, huh?
Yeah. And it's like mapping route to local pizza joint.
Yeah, that's right. It could do that. I mean, if that was something that you particularly like when you go to a new place, a new
right.
town.
You want to see the pizza places.
Yeah, you go down, go to the Southwest and you like barbecue.
Right.
And it routes you to some of the local hotspots. You know, that's the kind of thing that it could do. I mean, this thing could get a lot of people in big trouble too. Like, let's say, a traveler. Okay. Mm-hmm. Can I go with
that? Yeah, let's go for it.
There's an R-rated version for you, Ben.
Okay.
All right. Traveler who, he normally travels out of town, you know, on business or whatever.
Uh-huh.
Just individually, right?
You know, right.
Guy on business.
Whatever. He's in sales or something.
Exactly right. Well, this time he's taking his family with him, but he's going to Texas or something, or I'm just choosing Texas. But
yeah.
Goes to Texas, lands, and the navigation system dials in the local strip club.
Yep.
What happens then? How do you explain that away?
I would hope that, the businessman could call the rental company scandalized. You have to be angry. You know, my children are in the car.
Yeah. What is going on here? I've never in my life attended such a place.
Well, the nerve, the very idea.
Exactly right. Yeah. I'm so outraged right
well,
now.
Well, other than getting you deep, deep into the doghouse or helping you find a pizza place, this connectivity could also really help you out in traffic. Because imagine, you're the same salesman and, on top of your wife finding out that you go to strip clubs every time you're out of town, traffic is also terrible.
Mm-hmm.
But luckily, this computer, which you're already on the outs with this computer already can anticipate not just if there's congestion up ahead, but when congestion will be happening where.
So we're bringing it back around to the positive because,
yeah.
You know, these we've talked about in the past. I know we have. And mm-hmm. we've even talked about these as systems that can control streetlights,
yep.
things like that.
Yep.
Now, as far as controlling traffic patterns, I mean, that's a little tougher, but they can still do it. I mean, I think there was one that we talked about again in the streetlight episode.
Mm-hmm.
Can your car predict streetlights or something like
right,
that?
Yeah.
The car would slow down or speed up based on the idea of when that next light ahead was going to change either red or green, kind of depending on what it would do or, you know, if it anticipated if you could make it or not.
Right.
And if there was a group of cars, and I think it was a very low percentage, I mean, I want to say like 5% or 10% of the cars
mm-hmm.
that had that system, it could literally change the entire flow of traffic in the whole city if all those vehicles were on the road at the same time.
Yeah, it's kind of a butterfly flaps its wings sort of situation. But also, just the ability to predict based on car-to-car communication, the ability to predict how and when a certain interchange will become bogged down in traffic is not as crazy in science fiction as it sounds. I mean, most drivers in your city or in your town, let's be honest, you already know which places back up when, mm-hmm. and you have some shortcuts. I imagine most people do.
Sure.
You may be in that unfortunate situation where everybody knows the shortcut, which makes it impossible to use. But imagine if your computer just started doing this. That's crazy.
Now, see, I've been taking some long trips back and forth between Indiana and here. I've done it 3 or 4 times recently, and I've been using something called the Waze app.
And it's
not me in particular. My wife has been using it from the passenger seat.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, so it's safe. I'm not trying to do this while I'm driving or anything.
Right.
But, you know, there's been a lot of congestion on one of the highways on the way up there. And it's all road construction. And I know it's there. I know it's mm-hmm. happening. But it's unknown how far the backup is. And using the Waze app, I'm able to get around things like that. Now, it's similar in idea, only this would be an automatic system that, you know, is just kind of built into the vehicle already. You know, part of the navigation system, part of the connectivity.
But, right, yeah.
But the idea is that it shows you you know, where the congestion starts, where it ends, and then as soon as you exit, it automatically reroutes you around. Now, I know that navigation systems have done that for a long time, but the difference is that the Waze app will show you, you know, via just a color diagram, how slow the traffic is moving on the road right next to you, and tell you, you know, should you continue on this back road, this country road that's, you know, two lane or whatever and pretty slow, but you're still making better time than you would on the highway, which is right next to you.
Right. And other users use Waze to report. So it updates faster than a GPS.
That's right. Now,
traffic system.
But the main difference would be that the cars would be communicating with each other rather than operators using the app communicating with each other from the passenger seats as
right.
you drive.
Car-to-car communication, constantly updated traffic info from the cloud, also probably using some of your individual vehicle's data, maybe even getting to the point where the cars automatically slow down, change lanes, speed up, turn off, I can't let you do that, Dave, kind of stuff.
See, now the lane change thing is big to me because this next one, which is cars talking to each other, somehow it's making better sense of the environment that you're in than you as the driver can. I mean, it's understanding like what's happening far ahead and far behind you and all around you where you can't see, really. You don't know what's going on.
Mm-hmm.
But the cars, because they're communicating with each other, it can sense other vehicles around them and can understand why it might be a bad idea to make that next right turn. You should go straight ahead another block and then make that right turn and come back.
Yeah, and that makes sense because already as human drivers, it's very difficult to gauge the intentions of people who are driving with you, especially on the interstate. I mean, we're all adept at reading what I call car body language, right? For instance, you know when there's somebody who's contemplating a lane change and they start to do that annoying little move where they're kind of drifting toward the lane.
Sure, they kind of move towards that
just
because
they're thinking about it.
You just know that person's going to make a left or right turn.
Yeah, and the thing is that if the cars were talking to each other, then they would already know for certain and the guesswork would be gone and you wouldn't have to deal with those drivers who treat their turn signal like it's going to run out if they use it too often.
Well, I think the idea would be also that, you know, the car that is going to enter that lane would also know that you're approaching at a speed which makes that lane change
possible. Yeah.
Well, possible or not possible, usually in most cases.
Right?
All right. So, you know, it could eliminate things like, you know, some collisions, congestion, certainly. Mm-hmm. But they're also talking about it as a way to reduce insurance costs, but I kind of doubt this one, Ben. I don't think that insurance will come down anytime soon because of cars talking to each other, but I could be wrong.
I don't know. Maybe in the short to midterm as an incentive to get mm-hmm. people to get those sorts of cars, but then eventually, if it works, it will become mandated.
Yeah, that could be. It's kind of like the airbag thing. I mean, they used to ask you, does your car have airbags? And I don't know if they still do or not,
mm-hmm.
But that was kind of a cost savings thing. They would say, if your car had airbags, it's a safer vehicle for you to drive, and we're going to lower your premium.
Right, exactly. And speaking of the cash, the cold, hard scratch, this one is kind of cool.
I like this.
Yeah. What if your car key could also be the way you check in at the airport or the hotel or the way you buy things or even just download something?
Yeah, this is an interesting idea, isn't it? Now, we've heard of smart keys many, many times. We've talked about mm-hmm. keys and key technology, right? But electronics manufacturer Panasonic is coming up with a way to use a key like a credit card. So, you know, your key is not only the way you start your car, as you mentioned, Ben, but it's also the way you pay for everything. It would be like one device that you keep in your pocket, and that's it.
Well, here's the other side to this. I don't know about you, ladies and gentlemen, and I don't know about you, Scott. I lose my keys all the time.
Ah.
You probably don't. You have, you know, you got your life together. I'm just sort of mystified when I find my keys. That's how often I lose them.
Yeah, I think a lot of people are in the same boat. I haven't lost my car keys for a long, long time because I'm very, very cautious about it, not careful. But there was a time when, I would misplace my keys. I'd set them down on a desk somewhere or I would set them down on a shelf somewhere or they turn up in the oddest place, don't they?
Yeah, so you'd have to be able to deactivate that functionality remotely if it came to it because otherwise you wouldn't just be losing your keys. You'd be losing your credit cards, your bank account, your reservation, your airline ticket.
The ability to start your car.
Also, the ability to start your car.
The most crucial of all these, I guess, right? If you can call it that. But, yeah, I think for a lot of people, this would be a blessing. Other people, this would be a curse, really, to have to keep that smart key on you at all times. But I would love to be able to stop carrying my wallet. because I just can't stand sitting on a wallet when I'm driving.
Yeah.
When I'm at my desk, you know, wherever it is, it just drives me crazy. So if I could keep one device in my front pocket that's relatively thin, like, you know, these smart keys are, that would be, again, that'd be a blessing, I think.
Would be really cool. Mm-hmm. All right. So this next one, we shouldn't spend too much time on because we have at least 3 episodes on it.
Definitely. There's a, I guess who has the best connected car advantage right now? I guess that would be, manufacturers. And can you call them manufacturers?
I think we're going to be able to call them that pretty soon. Right now, let's just call them tech companies.
Tech companies like Google and Apple, because they are going to become car makers soon, which is strange. Now, Google has already unveiled its own driverless car. You know, we've heard a lot about that. But Apple, I guess it's got a real strong design ethos and ethos. And stockpile of cash, as they like to say in this article. So undoubtedly, there's a chance that they can come up with something very interesting in the very near future.
If they push for it. Right now, that is that's all speculation regarding Apple. Google, we know some stuff for sure. But there's another thing that's going to happen, regardless of which car you buy. In the next couple years, we'll have this thing called eCall, which I think is one of the most amazing and best ideas on this entire list.
Is that right? Okay, there's eCall, which stands for what?
An automatic emergency call.
Okay, and then there's another one. Did you know about this called B-Call? And B-Call stands for breakdown call. So similar idea, but E-Call is for emergencies, B is for breakdowns. So one gets you emergency service, the other one gets you mechanical service.
And the reason I think that's so valuable is because no matter how much control drivers give up or how safe or bad a driver is, at some point, accidents are going to happen. Mm-hmm. Even 70, 100 years from now, people are still going to be in accidents, and this could be a life-saving device.
Oh, definitely.
This is smart.
And with health issues that happen behind the wheel, and we hear about this often, sometimes you're unable to make a call, or you know, you're alone and you're unable to think clearly enough at the time because you're panicked, or you're physically unable to dial, which happens occasionally, unfortunately.
Sure,
but
yeah.
You know, this is something that will kind of take the place of you dialing the phone, actually, which I don't know. It's again a little scary, I guess. But these online concierge services.
Mm-hmm.
It's an interesting idea. In that, you know, it goes beyond the emergency call thing, the breakdown call thing. There's more to it than that. I mean, if you have somebody that you can call and they can check you into a hotel, they can find a local restaurant that you like, or what are some of the other things?
Well, they could also give you the dry cleaning place, tell you the best tailor in town. I think this would probably be more of a high end thing to actually speak with a human who's, Or maybe they just make the robot sound like a butler. I don't know.
See, I feel like this service is already out there. Isn't there already? I think there's a credit card that offers this. Isn't that right?
Yeah, there are credit cards. There's more than one credit cards that offer concierge services, but it's not embedded in the DNA of your car. Hmm. This would be like that plus OnStar.
Pretty strange, isn't it?
Whenever you want. Yeah. And here's what I don't like about it. It sounds expensive, which brings us to the next point. And one of the most important points. One of the things that I have always loved about cars, Scott, a little bit of a soapbox here, is that cars and the car industry are one of the few industries that allows you to do something that I think everyone should be able to do, and that is that you buy a product. You do not buy a service. Buying services is tricky.
But you know what? There's a couple of things that we're already buying, like satellite radio.
Right.
And I think the OnStar services and some of the other call services.
Those are services
that manufacturers offer. But you're right. When you buy a car, you buy that car, you pay for it, you go through the credit union, the financial service or whatever.
Sure.
And when you're done paying for it, you're done paying for it.
And it's yours.
You've got no car payment, but you do have insurance. You have, you know, fuel costs, things like that.
You have cost of ownership.
Exactly right. But there's no monthly or weekly subscription that you have to pay for to own that car. And this is the difference, because they're talking about with these connected cars, there will be actually, you know, these monthly or annual service subscriptions that you have to pay for. So, you know, you want to bundle your phone calls and navigation with streaming music.
Mm-hmm.
That's going to cost you. You want to, bundle all that stuff with concierge service as well.
Mm-hmm.
That's going to cost you on top of that. So the weird thing is that, you know, your car is going to be connected, but you're going to have these monthly or weekly or annual service charges that are just going to continue to pile up as long as you own the vehicle.
Forever, even after you pay for the car.
Forever and ever. Yeah, yeah. Until you decide that you don't want that service or you don't want that bundle. This sounds an awful lot like buying a cable service or something like that. Right?
Yeah. Oh, that's the thing that gets me. Okay, this, it gets my goat. It grinds my gears. I'm just a pile of broken gears and I have no goats anymore because I'm irritated about this, Scott.
Let's hear that rant.
All right. So car companies, say what you will about any car company. One thing that a lot of car companies don't do is they don't have that bill your customer continually kind of model that, some telecoms and, cell phone service providers have.
Okay. Can I just interrupt?
Yeah,
one
yeah,
second?
Yeah, yeah.
I'm kind of with you, and I'm kind of not understanding this because they do have a monthly thing where, I mean, they bill their customers monthly. You know, if you lease a car,
yeah,
you have a monthly payment, and it goes through Ford Credit or GM Financial or Chrysler Financial or whoever.
Right.
I don't understand why this bundle thing is such a wrench in the works.
For me?
No, not just for you. I mean, like the financial companies that are already doing the billing monthly.
Oh, okay. I see what you're saying. And Scott, you're talking about how, some large car manufacturers, like the big three specifically, have their own financial arms that handle stuff like warranties, leases.
Yeah. And they're fully adept at doing that.
Yeah, they are, but it's a little bit of a different kind of game, man, because, okay, let me just be completely on the level with you and everybody else listening. I am irritated by the practice of bundling things. Now, you mentioned a cable company earlier, right?
Sure.
Because you could go to a cable company and say, I just want channel, I don't know, pick a number, right?
How about just ESPN? I just want ESPN.
I just want ESPN. And they say, okay, that's great. Sign up for this bundle. And it's X amount of dollars a month. And you say, wait, but this has all these other things I don't want, like knockoff ESPNs. And,
well, yeah, it has 220 channels that I don't ever intend to watch.
Right. And, you know, they're saying, well, like QVC3 is very popular in, you know, whatever county you're in. And you say, I just want ESPN. And they say, you can't have it. So the idea that the companies who do that could be in charge of services for a vehicle is worrisome to me. Now, if the big three or other car manufacturers, Volkswagen, Ford, et cetera, if they own their own, services doing this, which will probably be smart eventually, then I would hope that they don't take the same approach because while it may make sense, you know, from the company's perspective, which is ultimately what their decision is going to hinge on, it's just no customers like it.
And just to give you a heads up, they're talking about, you know, that your bill for your Volkswagen Golf or whatever may come from Vodafone. So it may be like a Vodafone Volkswagen bill or
right.
a Ford O2 bill.
Right.
So, you know, you get these weird mixes of technology companies working with the credit unions from the manufacturers themselves.
Right. Verizon GM or something.
Exactly right. And that may be troublesome to some people for a lot of reasons and good points, Ben. I mean, the bundling thing. Like you can get this, but you also have to get these other two items with it, even though you only want the one.
Right. Can I just have a GPS in my car and the basic accident avoidance thing that I'm required to get by insurance? This is decades in the future, right?
Yeah, yeah.
And they say, well, sure, it sounds like you want our classic signature bundle. That comes with an automatic alert to pizza places and adult entertainment lounges. Throughout Texas.
Ah, you're bringing the theme through.
Man. Right, yeah. And I don't know. I see it being problematic. And I know that these subscriptions and these bundles are part of business models that have to exist for some reason. But man, I am going to be an unhappy customer in 15 years, man. Mark my words.
I think a lot of people will be. All right. So let's move on to something a little more positive. How about, how about your car connected to your home? Now, this is an interesting idea. And I've heard of this many, many times, but the idea is that you can, you know, heat up your car from a control pad inside your house. So there's
beautiful.
like a pad inside the home that connects the car that's out in your garage or in your driveway, wherever. Or it can work the reverse way that let's say that you wanted to preheat the oven on the way home. You can decide that, you know, from your car, not from your smartphone, because I bet there's a way to do this at this point. From your car, you'd be able to preheat the oven and have it ready to go as soon as you walk in the door.
Mm-hmm.
So things like that. I mean, that's a couple of simple simple ideas, you know, the most basic ideas, I guess. But the idea is that your car would be able to do this, not necessarily the smartphone that you have in your front pocket right now.
Yeah, and that's pretty cool. That's one of those technologies that always seems right around the corner.
Yeah, I know. I mean, of course, there's, you know, the automatic start, you know, the electric start for cars that's been around for a long, long time. Mm-hmm. So you can do that right from the front window. You know, if you look out and push the button and it does it. And the other thing, as far as preheating the oven, things like that, it seems like there's a way to do that. I'm sure there is.
I think there is. It really goes back to the infrastructure of the house. That's more of a smart home thing.
Yeah, I guess so. And I mean, turn on certain lights for safety before you arrive home.
That's great.
Or, you know, unlock certain gates or doors. I mean, I
open
totally
the dog's crate or whatever.
Yeah, that's a good idea, Ben. So there's all kinds of things you can do with this. So.
Well, sorry. I don't want to walk over you, Scott, but I'm excited about this next one.
You know, I got to tell you, Ben, this next one is probably my favorite one on the whole list.
It's a really good idea.
I think it is. Now, why are you excited about this?
Well, I'm excited about this because, the problem of car theft is going to continue for a while. And we being people who have cars, have tried all sorts of things to discourage theft. You know, if you were of a certain age, then you remember the old ads for, what was that thing that would lock the steering wheel?
The club.
The club, yeah. You remember the ads for the club. And it seems like as soon as someone figured out a new way to stop thieves figured out a new way to steal.
Well, sure, there's immobilizer systems and there's all kinds of safety things. You know, the smart keys that we talked about, you know,
right.
You have to have the smart key. Otherwise, the vehicle will only start and stop for, you know, or only start for 5 seconds and that's it.
But this is way cooler.
This is way cooler. Now, when I read the title of this one, it's called Cars Recognizing Drivers. I thought, okay, well, the cars have been doing this for a while. You put the key in the ignition, you turn it, it realizes that the person who holds that key is what we call driver number one, the primary driver.
Right, so the seat scoots back and the mirrors tilt to the right angle.
Precisely. That's what I was thinking this was, right? But this is something completely different. This is using cameras and sensors for facial recognition. To allow engine startup and operation, which is really, really cool. And I guess this is, the idea is that, you know, someone gets in the car and tries to start it, even if they have the key.
Right. It will say, you are not Bob Smith.
Yeah, because it will realize with these, you know, these cameras and sensors, it'll say, this is not the person that should be holding that key at this time. So let's say you've loaned the vehicle to your brother-in-law.
Right.
And your brother-in-law gets in the car. He's not going to be able to even start the car with your key because it will send a message to your cell phone, your smartphone.
Right.
It'll show you an image of the person that's currently behind the wheel of your car, and then you'll have to authorize that person to start the vehicle or not. And I think that's brilliant.
And I think that is brilliant, too. And I'm surprisingly a fan of that. I have a concern, but it goes back to our themes later. So next one. Finding parking spaces. We've talked about this. This is cool. This is kind of another application of the traffic anticipation.
Mm-hmm.
Now, we also have a podcast about this regarding Audi. I think they have a fantastic parking system.
Yeah, this was Audi at the 2013 CES show out in Las Vegas, right? And they kind of did a little demo of a car finding its own parking space. You know, it's the... I think this is the exact same thing as the Audi system is what they're talking about here. Is that right? I mean, it's, you know, you pull into a parking lot and you just kind of let the car go find its own spot. Well, you go in and shop. And then when you come back and you push a button and the car returns to you on the curbside, it's a wonderful thing, really. It'd be really cool, but it does require some infrastructure.
Yes. And speaking of infrastructure, we did another show on black boxes in vehicles, which already exist. In many cars, especially the more recent ones, as well as, you know, if you're thinking about the information a black box provides, your cell phone is kind of a black box. But they're going to be everywhere. They're going to be a central component of any connected cars. They'll interact with everything else in your car to make things safer, and beam the data back to the cloud. So you will always be under observation, or at least your driving habits.
That's true. And some people are right now volunteering to have that information kind of under the microscope. And I'm talking about the insurance companies that provide, you know, the programs, I guess. You know, for example, there's the one that's Progressive Insurance. They have something called the Snapshot Program. And I think Allstate has one called the DriveWise device.
Mm-hmm.
And those are the ones that plug into the car's diagnostic port and it monitors everything that the vehicle does throughout a certain period of time, and then they can access that information to determine if you're a safe driver and if you're eligible for certain discounts.
Right. Yeah. And I hope that there's no one who has signed up for this and had their rate increased as a result of lead foot or something.
And the idea is that if you know someone's watching, if you know somebody is paying attention mm-hmm. to what you're doing, you're going to do the right thing all the time. Now, we've talked about this so many times, Ben. You should mm-hmm. do the right thing all the time even when no one's watching. But when you know that there's that watchful eye, you know, what are you going to do? You're going to behave a little bit better, right?
Wow.
You're going to always be on your best road behavior, right?
Yeah. And, you know, that's a good point. There's one other point here that we should say, which is a small but important difference. Things like Spotify and Pandora can be directly beamed to our cars. Digital music is going to blow up.
Yeah, digital music is huge. As a matter of fact, it's going to outpace music purchases, like, you know, physical purchases, CDs, by something like 2016. So they're saying that up to 125 million people worldwide are going to subscribe to streaming services by 2017. Mm-hmm. So this is huge. I mean, it's a big, big deal. It's changing faster than you think. I know, you know, probably our audience, I bet a lot of them are listening to downloaded copies of this right now.
Sure.
In their car.
Or on Sirius or XM
exactly,
or
right.
iHeartRadio.
But imagine being able to get it directly from your car just automatically as we update, you know, as we update our information.
Yeah.
That's the difference. You're able to get it right from your car. You don't have to have any kind of secondary device like a pass-through.
Here's something else that we should go ahead and mention. This interaction, before we get to one of our big scary points, this interaction brings up some huge issues for me, because when we talk about Spotify, right, which is a social media of music playlists, one reason that I'm not on Spotify is because it's kind of tricky to keep it from going on to other social media places and saying, you know, Ben Bolin is listening to Jim Croce or something like that, right? And there are some real privacy concerns, especially given what Facebook does. I would never want Facebook on my car. And I would just be concerned about where this information would go and who would be able to access it, which leads us to the final point.
Yeah, and we mentioned that this was kind of the drawback, I guess, or the consequence of having a connected car.
Mm-hmm.
And the consequence would be car hacking, of course. Now, it's kind of an obvious drawback, I suppose. You know, people that are going to capitalize on the opportunity that, you know, all this data that's just kind of rolling around with you in your car and floating around out there in the cloud. Now, I say that, you know, tongue-in-cheek, I guess, you know, floating around the cloud, I suppose. It's not really that way. There's going to be securities in place, but you and I know that there have been major breaches recently of information,
mm-hmm.
and it's a possibility that if all of your data is out there, all of your data can some way be grabbed by somebody else.
Yeah, and that goes with any sort of data that exists online or in this cloud, because ultimately that's what a cloud is designed to be used for, access to information remotely. So it's
just depends on who's accessing that information, right?
I mean, yeah.
Is it you, the person who's supposed to, or is it somebody else that shouldn't? And what are they going to do with that information? Is it going to be catastrophic or is it going to be relatively harmless?
I think that this brings us to the point where we talk about themes. And one of the themes that I see here is an increased inequality of privacy. Now, I'm not saying loss of privacy. Mm-hmm. I'm saying inequality of privacy, because the ways in which manufacturers and advertisers use this data, that may be private, right? That might be a trade secret. But what you and I are doing in our cars are fine. Our cars are both too old.
Yeah, that's right. We're safe from this point, right?
We're old men off the grid. But just imagine, you know, if you have a kid now and think about when your kid is driving age or when they get their next car or something, the car that they get is going to be very different, and it's going to be much more talkative than any car that you would have, which is fine when they're kids, but they're going to grow up without a real expectation of privacy.
That's true, I guess. Yeah. I mean, it's something that you give up. You give up that privacy in order to have these connected cars and to be able to, you know, connect with all these other vehicles around you, like we're talking about, and the environment that you're driving in. It's just it's a consequence of the connected vehicle.
Yeah.
And it's going to happen. It really is. It's happening quickly. We see it happening right now.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, the way that manufacturers are thinking about this, they're thinking about ways to combat this and how are they going to do it? And are they going to be successful in doing it? Well, they've got to be spot on in the way they do this, because if they don't, it's going to be a very costly mistake for them. If there's an information breach that allows, drivers of every General Motors product to be somehow, compromised with their security information, with their personal information, it would have everything, where your home address, it would have all kinds of personal information about every single person, where they go to the doctor's office, where they go, recreation, whatever it is.
Right.
Very personal information to people. If that is compromised in some way, people are going to be outraged. There are going to be major lawsuits. We've seen individual companies that have had, breaches of information, that have had problems with hackers. But imagine if an entire brand of automobile were to be hacked in this way.
Right. The future of automobiles.
It would be huge. It'd be a big difference.
It reminds me of, this is a cool historical context for us. We've done shows on Zeppelins. We've done shows on jets. And one thing that we found is that the first commercial jetliners, right, were doing a gangbuster business, but one accident killed the industry. Mm-hmm. And the Hindenburg disaster killed the industry of Zeppelins, right?
Sure.
So when a new form of transportation, and I know it's not the first jet and it's not the first Zeppelin, but what I mean by form of transportation is a commercially available mainstream thing. When that happens, there's a very, very sensitive point in time. And if something goes wrong within that point of time, then the entire industry will die.
And this is why Chevrolet was so hesitant about putting out the Volt.
Oh, yeah.
Because they didn't want it to go wrong. They have everything to lose at that point because the world is watching them. They wanted to make sure that everything was exactly right. Mm-hmm. And that happens in so many different industries. They want to make sure that they get it right the first time because, history tells us that people will quickly revert back to what they already know and they're comfortable with if something new doesn't quite work the way that they promised it would.
Right. Also, people will buy these cars. I'll buy one. And one of the things I'll start doing is checking out how people have hacked these vehicles for their own privacy.
And ways to protect yourself.
Right. And if it is possible to do so. Now, I want to end on a positive note. So at least I'll go for a self-deprecating one. You guys, yes, I have massive problems with some of the implications of this. I'm still going to buy the car because it's really cool to land, hop out of a plane, and know where the best pizza in town is, which is not quite, like selling out your integrity, but there are real concerns and we'll probably inevitably end up participating in this system if you drive.
Now, there's so much more to it than that, Ben. Think about like the idea of taking all of your information with you into a rental car. It's not just that pizza place, because you can do that with an app probably.
That's
right
true.
Now, I would
yeah.
say.
There's probably like a Find Pizza app.
But also then consider that, the car kind of knows you, I guess, when you get there. That's a strange thing. That's a weird thing to think about, I think, is that it knows you before you arrive, or as you arrive.
Right. You can avoid traffic. You can predict where the best route to go when is. I mean, there are numerous advantages, but the point of the matter is there are also numerous cons. This is an entirely different game. This is not the car that our parents drove.
Oh, definitely not. No. So this is advancements that are going to happen within, we said, maybe about a decade. That's kind of the common rule of thumb, I guess, when
right.
we talk about these things. But, you and I both know that some of these show up a little bit earlier than they promise, and others will just go away. So
yeah.
Of this list of 16 or so things, or 17 if you want to include the hacking part, some may hit, some may not. And we'll see how this whole thing plays out.
And while we're waiting on the edge of the seat, we would like to hear from you. So let us know, do you think that the future of cars is utopian? Do you think it's for the better? Do the good things like the emergency call that could save your life, do they outweigh the possible risks of hacking or having somebody prying into your business? You can tell us about it on Facebook and Twitter, where Scott and I post things that don't always make it into the podcast. You can also check out all of our podcasts on our website, carstuffshow.com, and you can send us an email directly. We are
carstuff@howstuffworks.com.
For more on this and thousands of other topics, visit howstuffworks.com. Let us know what you think. Send an email to podcast@howstuffworks.com.